Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, everybody. Ryan Ballinger here. Thanks for coming into today's show. Colin Reed joins me. He's the founder and CEO of Woosh. And we're going to talk about Woosh and its relationship to the space of hospitality and golf and managing tee sheets, kind of managing the golfer experience. So first, Colin, thanks for being here. Can you give folks your background, not only as an entrepreneur, but also as a golfer and how you're marrying the two with the company?
Yeah. First off, Ryan, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be on the show today and excited to tell our story. Background here, a little bit of a biography tour. I grew up playing golf competitively, since I was about 7, 8 years old. Was captain of my high school team, was a captain of my college team at Claremont McKenna, became a two-time All-American. And then after that, I actually tried going professional. And I'll be honest, my short game is not very good. So that was a short-lived pursuit. Ended up in 2006, I then fell into investment banking. This is back when, we were doing reverse mergers and pipes. Those are basically now called SPACs. But there was actually ways for companies to get started back in the day on the bulletin board. And I realized that I had access to capital. So we raised some capital there. And one of the companies was actually a company that my dad was looking to start called Ecotality. And it was designed to be a battery charging company back in 2006 before EVs were a thing. And I realized that sounded a lot more fun than just raising capital for a lot of other companies. So I actually joined on with him in that fundraise, was co-founders of that company. We launched the Blink line of electric vehicle charging stations. It was the world's largest EV charging network at the time. We supported the Nissan Leaf, the Chevy Volt, the Tesla Roadster. We IPO'd to NASDAQ. And in 2012, ABB actually acquired a big Swiss conglomerate, acquired that company. So that was kind of phase one, solving a really big problem of ubiquitous electrification for everybody. After that, though, I spent basically 8 years building that company, tried to innovate. And if you ever try to innovate and you're stuck between the automotive company and a utility, that's a really hard space to innovate in. So at that point, I got connected with Garrett Camp, the founder of Uber. He was starting his next startup after that. And I joined on the early team there as one of the founding employees there called Reserve. And Reserve really focused on fine dining table management. And we saw a really big issue in the space with, Open Table and everyone else having a dominant player, but no one really met the needs of, the restaurant workers, the facilities, and really focused on hospitality. So Reserve really focused on that. We built probably the best fine dining table management solution. We actually merged with a company called Resy. So that platform has a lot of things that we built at Reserve, and then we were off to the races. At that point, I actually went to a VC fund called Expa. Was on a board observer for Resy as they did that transaction with American Express, and was then trying to figure out what I was going to do next. Was actually about to start this company in about 2017. And then I actually got recruited to run corp dev at a company called Common Networks. It did 5G internet solutions, like network optimization plannings. Did that for about 2 years and responsible for their acquisition by Facebook in November. Realized I am not the type of person that would work at a company like Meta, just not my DNA. At which point I was approached by some investors and they had a thesis around golf, and realized that they needed someone to kind of lead this venture. And I asked them what that thesis was, and they said it's for you to figure out. And we kind of realized really quickly that, by 2020, we started this company December 2020, the golf world was just dominated by old legacy platform solutions. And the private club industry specifically was dominated by some big players that really are 25, 30-year-old on-premise legacy solutions. Yeah. And we said, that's a place to start. And I'm a member of a private country club. We use an old, I'd say it's best in class app, but it felt very old and legacy to me. And that didn't represent my member experience. And then when you started to watch the staff workflows of how do they run their day-to-day operations, it was riddled with inefficiency. It was riddled with different programs, 12, 15 softwares that did not talk to each other. And in COVID, you know, golf pros, I'd say prior in the 90s, early 2000s, you became a golf pro because you loved golf. You wanted to play golf. I'd say the past decade, though, has seen a big shift to more these folks are now service professionals. They are hospitality pros. They're serving at the pleasure of the membership. They're not playing as much golf. And we said, great, how do we make their jobs more efficient? How do we give them time to go back on the course? How do we make hospitality tools better for them? How do we make the member experience better? And to us, we believe the best member experiences come from great staff interaction. So we've really been focused on solidifying staff workflows and putting in a lot of hospitality tools and what we built at Woosh. So it's been an exciting journey here. You know, we're named best in class for golf in 2022, best club operations in 23. And now we've expanded out in the public with our partner Square. So a lot of growth ahead of us.
How did your experience with what ultimately kind of became Resi or part of Resi, thinking about a hospitality experience first, influence how you've developed and thought about Woosh and the private club experience, not as something that's transactional of just playing golf, like you might think about at a municipal course or a public course, as opposed to what is really a hospitality experience every time you step on property at a private club?
So there's two things, right? If you walk into a Jean-Georges restaurant or a Carbone or any of these fine dining establishments, they probably looked you up on LinkedIn. They probably know who you are. They're probably getting a good feel based on their records of their history. And, you know, they really dial in that experience, right? I'm sure, Ryan, when you go to these premier venues, the chef is always out, you know, touching the table for you and saying hello to you. Like, those are very unique, and those add those memorable moments. And, you know, I think when you translate that now to a private club, what's the worst experience you can get when I pull up to bag drop and they say, I'm sorry, are you a member here? Right? Yes, like, exactly. Nothing gets worse than that experience. So how do we solve those pieces? And so you'll notice in our workflows, we really try to build, you know, one, data in is going to be the lead result of data out. How do we build a better format for staff to actually apply member notes? Ryan loves a wet, you know, towel on his card or a bucket of beers in the back, things like that, those little small pieces. How do we let members, you know, staff better recognize members by their picture, by their photos, and really anticipate their needs? So we brought a lot of that into the private club workflow. I think the big one, though, is just, you know, a typical private golf course probably uses 12, 15 pieces of software. Right. They don't talk to each other, right?
Right.
We've all sat there at a member guest when, or a member, when we finish their first round, we all wait by the pro shop to say, great, when are we teeing off tomorrow? And that's a lot of manual entry. And so we realized really, if we can start to plug in some of this excessive data entry that's going on staff, if we can save them 10, 15, 20 hours a week, our goal is to put that back towards the membership experience. And so really Resi did a lot with how we create better staff workflow tools, those things. We're copying a lot of like what we did in that past life. So for us, when you close out a T-sheet, we'll actually send an email to all staff. You know, in the dining terms, this would be a pre-service like stand, but we'll send an email out to all staff. Here's the course notes for tomorrow. Here's the group notes that are coming out. Here's a separate email thread for staff to start a conversation, prepare for service, right? So we're taking a lot of those tools and workflows and really pushing those in. I would say the public dichotomy is very, very interesting to us, and it really tracks a lot to what we see in the reservation side. In public dining reservations, you have OpenTable. And OpenTable, I've taken shots at them for 10 years. I think you'll notice like OpenTable, it's a bartering model, like they're cannibalizing the revenue from operators. You know, you're paying fees to get reservations and they come in through your own website. Yeah. And there's a lot of pushback on that. As you look at GolfNow and those things, first off, they built a great solution. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of discussion around bartering. Is that the right solution? And so we actually see a lot of similarities between OpenTable and GolfNow as we kind of approach this sector. Again, I have a lot of great things to say about them, but I think there's similar types of dynamics between standalone destination facilities and like what Resi was for that sector and what we now see kind of OpenTable and GolfNow being for kind of that middle of the market, you know, facilities that I think people need to discover to want to go play, right? So there's a lot of similarities there too.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't really count as much toward the, you know, the private club market. Most of those types of facilities, that there are, that's all internal. There's not public facing stuff to that, but there is a good, there are a good number of facilities that are high end, high quality, $125 and above green fee that do need some public facing facet of this. And I've probably over the years gone back and forth about where they want to be on a T sheet portal or anything like that. But it also feels like with the way golf has responded in COVID and post COVID, and it's kind of maintained itself, that a lot of those facilities that maybe were kind of thinking about using a T-sheet provider or, you know, a barter service like GolfNow, maybe don't need it quite in the same way they did or perceived the way that they need it now in 2024 as they might have 5, 6, 7 years ago.
That's right. You know, again, I'll look at the OpenTable analogy. When I go to look at OpenTable in San Francisco, there's a lot of really, really big restaurants in Fisherman's Wharf and tourist areas that are there to get that discovery. Right? Yeah. Most of the Michelin-starred restaurants aren't actually on OpenTable these days, right? Because they have ample demand. You know, I think GolfNow plays a really, really integral piece in this entire ecosystem. And they've done a great thing to really build this ecosystem. You know, that being said, does that marketing platform need to be persistent for every single club? Does every club need to be on GolfNow to be successful? We would argue probably not. I think we need to give operators choice. And that's the most important thing about as we move into kind of our Woosh expansion in public is how do we give operators choice to use best in class software and solutions? How do we give them choice to like identify where they want to market themselves and identify and give them more control over rates and those structures? You know, we will have facilities that want to market on GolfNow. Let's make sure we can make that happen. At the end of the day, this is a little about just how do we better as an industry and as a whole listen to our customers, take down some of the defensive walls we have, and make sure that everything communicates. And I like to remind people, it's 2024. The cloud works. Integrations are here, right? Data can flow without being in silos. You know, it's time for this industry now to really adopt and embrace that more modern approach to integrations and software development.
Yeah, I've always been kind of confused having worked at Billy Casper Golf a decade ago, but trying to work with different vendors and integrations between T-sheet, accounting, marketing, all kinds of different stuff, fleet management. I mean, lots of different things, and none of them really worked together easily. And you would think at this point, you know, 10 years on, as you mentioned, cloud software as a service is great. You can have a module-based approach of here's what I need to run my facility. Maybe I don't need module X, Y, and Z, but I need A through L. Let's take these and make it work for our business. And that's what it sounds like you guys are doing for the private club industry and even the public club, you know, whoever wants to get to be a client. Hey, here's what you need for your business. Let's go and work with that. And it can all talk to one another.
That's right. You know, I think the private club world has, you know, it's dominated by legacy tech and a little bit by legacy ideas too. But I like to kind of remind folks, like, you know, there's not another industry in the world that has so much disparate, different variations of operations under one roof.
Right.
And that's trying to buy all their software from one vendor. That just doesn't occur anymore, right?
Yeah.
Like my locker room staff, my barber shop, my front of house for restaurants, you know, my golf staff should all use the same software from the same vendor. They're probably not getting best in class.
Right.
And as we deal on the private side, huge ones, right? We deal with a lot of premier facilities, top 100 courses. You know, on the dining operations, they want to give Michelin quality service to their customers. Like, show me a Michelin quality restaurant that's using the legacy dining room software to provide that. It doesn't work. So if we could break this down and say, great, we want every operator to use best in class software. We want the restaurateur to run their restaurant with the same tools as a lettuce entertainment venue, right? We want your golf staff to run the best tools to run their T-sheet, but then also the best tournament management solution like Golf Genius to run that. And those should all sync together. So we're now in this day and age of like, can we actually wrap the customer interface and make those all feel seamless? Like what we say is, can we make it grandpa proof in a lot of ways?
Right.
And at booking dining and events and lessons all feel the same. But on the back end, how do we make it so that operators are using the best tools to make them run more efficiently?
So Whoosh is kind of, to try to make this sound simplistic, it sits over top of the best options available for the, an individual facility so that it, as you mentioned, all kind of feels like we're within one ecosystem, even though there are a lot of smaller parts to that ecosystem.
Yeah, on the private side, we are compatible with all the legacy providers. Now, some of those definitely play a lot better than others with integrations, right? But we are compatible with all those solutions. We want to keep those system integrities while modernizing the operational activities for staff, and then obviously roping together a better member app and member experience for digital booking.
We talked about marketing a little bit earlier, more of an outward facing thing. But for a private club, I feel like so many of them miss the opportunity to market internally. They either just kind of email blast or have a website calendar. They're kind of doing the minimum to get the member engaged, not only from a revenue standpoint to get them participating in more things, but just to get them to be a part of the club culture. Okay, you've paid your dues, you've paid your initiation, you're going to pay it regardless. You're in for your minimum. That almost seems like the attitude at a number of facilities instead of saying, all right, how do we get these people who want to play golf every day of the week to come and dine more often or to go play pickleball sometimes or use the pool, what have you? How important have you found in working with facilities? Do they emphasize making the member experience, marketing to their own members to get them to get the most out of the club?
So again, let's take this track of integrations work. The cloud's here. We want every operator to use best-in-class software, right? When you go to a restaurant, what are you going to get when you leave that restaurant? You're getting an email saying, we hope you enjoyed your stay. Rate our experience. When I go to my club, I don't get that. When I go to any private club, there is really no feedback loop. And so let's just take dining, for example. We partnered up with Seven Rooms, one of the leading providers of table management, right? I wish it was Resy, but for some reason we went with Seven Rooms. And you know what they have ingrained is, hey, we haven't seen you in three weeks. Let's send out a automated "We miss you" tag and say we'd love to have you come on back. Free appetizers this weekend. Come on in and visit us. Right, those types of things are built into these solutions, and these legacy solutions that are doing everything, they haven't really been able to touch all those pieces. Right. Yeah. So I think part of this is having operators use the right software for their operations with the right tools and the right touch points with members is going to unblock a lot of those, I'd say, hospitality pieces that we've come accustomed to in the public venues. Right. So that's a really, really big piece for us is how do we better improve that? I think the other one here is when you get to a club, especially like a primary country club with a lot of amenities, some of the communications actually become noise, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm actually not a very good tennis player. Do I really care that there's an advanced tennis clinic going on the weekend? Right. I'm like barely a 3-0. I can't play 4-0 and 4-5 events. And so for even on that side, it's about actually how can the club be better at targeting people? And for us, what we've done, again, using some hostile pieces, is create player tags. Like Ryan can be a turtle and he's a slow player. Let's not pair him up with other fast players on a, 8 o'clock tea time, for example. Yeah. Or, Ryan loves Nike and Grayson. Next time we get stuff in the pro shop, can I tag Ryan with that tag and then let him know about those promotions, right? Or that tennis environment, Ryan's a 3-0. Let's actually hide any discussion of an advanced tennis clinic for him. And really, it's beginner and intermediate clinics that you're only able to access, view, and be relevant to you. So to us, it's not even about, can we just communicate better? It's can we also communicate with relevant, actionable things and make sure like the signal to noise in club communications, is blending a lot more higher to like higher signal, point of activations, call to actions that customers and members and guests can actually utilize.
I haven't worked in software development back before I ever got into this stuff in golf. I've always found that the clients know what they want, but they don't necessarily know how to either communicate it or once they get the feature set that they asked for, how to fully use it. And software is only as good, or soft services are only as good as the people who are inputting, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So for a client of Whoosh, how much of the experience for them is figuring out how to optimize their own processes outside of technology so that they can get the most out of the technology?
That's a big one. Great question. You know, I think when you go into these legacy facilities, I grew up at Arizona Country Club, right? And the men's grill had Gloria, and she knew every single thing. And she's been with us for, you know, 30 years, right? And same with the halfway house. It was Bonnie up there that made fresh Otis Spunkmeyer cookies for everyone that came by, and Preston in the locker room, right? But they were all there for 30 years. What happens when they leave, right? How do we ingrain that institutional knowledge and process throughout that facility? Like, that's a big piece of what we're actually trying to tackle, is how do you get that same experience from Gloria and Preston and now give that to like your general staff that may swell because they're brand new and they're coming in for the summertime kind of push, right? There's those pieces that we really think are critical to that member experience. And part of that is training. Part of that is communicating with clubs. And part of that is just giving them the right tools. So that's our approach on that end. I think your first question was actually around how do they do feature requests and those types of things. I think for us, we want to be really cognizant. We are a tech company. We're pushing out new features and products every Monday. We don't wait in season or out of season. We want to build solutions for our customers that are by our customers. And we've had some really great facilities from Shinnecock to Olympic give us a lot of feedback. We put that right in the product in a very quick period of time. And so if we build product intuitively, like we like to say, if you can use Facebook or Instagram, you should be able to operate a T-sheet. If you could build those intuitive things, build them into the right workflows, make sure the UX is like simple and straightforward. There isn't as much staff onboarding in those things, but I would say listening to our customers, coming out with feature requests, having great support, great communication is really critical to making this whole ecosystem work.
So are you guys working at kind of a scrum style of, hey, you get this email, you get this phone call, have this check-in with a customer, like, hey, it'd be really cool if ... and then you go attack the problem? Or how does that process work with a customer that's as high-end or as well-known as Shinnecock or Olympic?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we need to think through. We have, you know, several hundred customers now. What do we prioritize in our roadmap? Our engineering resources, while it's arguably as big, if not bigger, than anyone else in the industry, how do we prioritize those resources? And so we like to think about low effort, high impact as our matrix, right? Yep. If recurring lessons for tennis is the number one thing that 20 clubs are asking for, that's what we'll prioritize versus a smaller feature that maybe one large club is looking at, right? We try to wait until we get critical mass for these feature requests and then push them in. But it needs to be an echo chamber. It has to be applicable to all for us, or at least something that they may want down the road before we build those feature sets. But I think we have kind of internally, like we have four or five requests for those. Those then become on the roadmap and we start to prioritize them. So it really is a little bit of pick and choose, but we want to figure out what most impacts the daily workflow of our customers and address those issues first and foremost.
How much do either customer base of yours talk to one another, or how much, just kind of generally speaking, do private clubs talk to one another about operations? I mean, I'm sure people are friendly with one another in our small world, but how often do those conversations turn into, boy, I wish X, Y, and Z was this, or what have you experienced with Whoosh? Here's how we're using it implementation wise. How often does that happen, or at least from what you understand, how often that happens?
I would say the public world is a little bit different than private. The private world, there's about 5,000 private golf courses in North America, right? That is a very tight collegial community. And what we've seen over the past year or two is people have used this for a season two, tell their friends, and that kind of snowballs after that. But it's amazing to see how much private clubs work together through great organizations like NCA and CMAA to collaborate on best practices and tips. You know, we work with Country Club Louisiana, and down there, they actually created a Southern section, like private group that was really meeting via Zoom with, you know, 20 of the top facilities down there to talk about best practices in COVID. How are they dealing with kind of these changes to online memberships versus no tee times? How are they dealing with increased compaction and staffing and masking requirements and those things? So we see a lot of these groups really talk about best practices and like what they want to see in the space. So that's been really good, is that we've been able to get good, I'd say, consensus across our customers on features we want to prioritize. But yeah, it's really impressive to watch how tight knit that private club community actually is and how much they really collaborate as an industry.
What's one thing that's kind of surprised you in building Whoosh about the private club industry that maybe you didn't know, or maybe you thought you knew and turned out maybe you were a little surprised by the answer about?
I would say what people say they want and what they want, there's actually a discrepancy, right? And that's really interesting to me. Again, if you talk to private club managers, what do they want? They want one solution that does everything and does it perfectly. And they say, we want one fully integrated solution. Well, what's the key word there? I hear integrated. I hear you guys want a fully integrated solution. Again, it's the only sector with that's trying to buy software from one vendor. Right. But to us, I think we got to kind of tease out some customer asks here. Do you want one vendor to do everything and expect them doing the best? Because that's not going to happen. Do you want an integrated solution? Well, it's 2024. We all should be asking for that. So there's a little bit there. I'd say the biggest one is inertia has just a lot of momentum. Hey, we're a club. We've been running pen and paper. We've done this for 30 years. You know, I have a controller in the back. No way they are ever going to change our accounting software, right? So inertia has a lot of momentum, where if it doesn't feel like it's broke, why fix it? And I think that's the piece where private clubs can actually get nudged a little bit further. It's listen to your members, listen to your customers. They're getting younger. Convenience is much more of something that we anticipate as table stakes versus a convenience, right? And so like, we have to listen, we have to be progressive. Like any other industries, if you're not looking to get better, if you're not looking to become more efficient, you're getting worse, right? Relative to your peers. And so that's a piece here where how do we manage and meld progress, efficiency, technology advancement with culture of a facility? That's probably been one of the biggest, I say, challenges and warnings I'd give a lot of folks, is you have to be able to do some of the stuff behind the scenes, because your member facing experience, maybe they want that to feel like it's very old school. We have to realize that's how they want to deliver hospitality.
It feels like the culture of golf has changed pretty substantially, maybe the last 5 or 10 years in the aggregate. What I don't know is how quickly that's changed in private. It feels like it in places and spots, it's probably changed dramatically. And I know it's changed in some ways at the clubs I belong to pretty dramatically. So how is it, if you were trying to assess kind of the change, how is that, how quickly do you think that's happening? And is there a tipping point where, okay, demographically, technology, you know, all that stuff is kind of coming together and you go, okay, we're now moving in a different direction, kind of in mass?
So COVID was obviously a tipping point, right? When we started seeing private clubs get 30% more volume, that really stressed out legacy providers. A lot of people scrambled to try and get apps out there the right way and just accommodate some of the new rules and restrictions around COVID, right? That changed the game. And arguably, I'd say the industry missed a couple real key opportunities there of upfront billing for public tee times and some of these other things that occurred in COVID. So I would say that was probably the biggest turning point. But I think now with technology advancement, you know, we're going to see a lot more changes in how we're thinking around these facilities, how we're adopting technology and those types of pieces. So overall, you know, I think the sector is growing quickly. I think for us, you know, we are really focused on our partnership with Square with Public Daily Fee Golf, where, you know, 80% of our private customers that buy a tee sheet buy lessons or clinics or events or sims or something else golf related. In the public, you don't have that offering. So we're really focused on hardening and having a comprehensive solution. From there, we're actually moving towards entertainment this fall. And we actually see kind of that alternate golf facilities. To me, if you're swinging a golf club, you're playing golf. I don't know what else to call it, right? Green grass or in a box, you are swinging golf, you're competing, you're trying to hit good shots and get a low score. So we view that really being a huge extension of where the sport's going, right? And we think that is going to be the future of golf. It's going to get younger. It's going to get more approachable, right? It's going to become more progressive. And no longer am I going to have to wear pants or certain color socks or whatever when I go visit a golf course, right? And that's what the game needs. So, you know, we're trying to grow the game. We think these great experiences help. We think that the new demographics are changing. But, you know, from where I sit, someone that's using a five iron golf or a Top Golf should deserve just as much hospitality as someone that's playing Shinnecock or Friar's Head, right? And we need to basically cultivate that regardless of age, what they're wearing or whatever else that is. Let's make golf welcoming to the masses.
Yeah, doesn't matter whether you're young or old, whether you've been playing this forever, or you're new to it, whatever that is. If you feel like you've got a good experience, you're going to come back for more. And that doesn't matter, as to your point, where you pick up the golf club or how you prefer to play. But if you feel like you're welcome and had a good time, then you're going to come back and do it some more. And that's where Woosh can be extremely important to that process.
One of our first public customers is Grass Clippings. I think that's an amazing model to have a lighted par three course down in Tempe. When you fly into Phoenix at night, you see this thing. So you realize you're in the golf capital. But I mean, they have a tee sheet that opens up at 7 a.m. Their last tee time is 10 o'clock at night. You know, if I'm still in Phoenix and I get out of work at 5, I'm definitely going over there, hit balls and play a few holes. And that's going to be part of my routine. And so the way that we are consuming the game, whether it's, you know, shorter parts, you know, six hole courses, threes, grass clippings, like those are also evolving right now. I think TGL is going to be a big evolution for sim golf for the next year.
Yeah.
The game is progressing. You know, our goal is to hold on to some tradition, but not clench too tightly. Let's make this a mass market game that's accessible for all. And let's really set the stage for the next generations of golfers the next 2-3 decades.
Well, Colin, thank you for spending so much time with me. I really appreciate it. Can you give folks who are interested in learning more about Woosh some direction on where to go and where to connect with you guys?
Yeah. First, again, thanks, Ryan. Really appreciate it being on the show today. For those interested in Woosh, whether you're a private club, golf, tennis, rackets, whether you're a public facility, we encourage you to come check out what we're building. Go to www.woosh.io to learn more about us, or reach out to us at hello@woosh.io.
Colin, thanks again for being on with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.